Following program is intended for mature audiences.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
Let's talk football.
Let's talk football.
One constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball.
There's been a lot of complaints already. Bad language, smoking grass.
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Been a couple of weeks. We had my favorite time of the year, the NFL draft. We had Bucks playoffs fallout. Dan's still here. He's still alive, which we weren't sure about at the end of our last podcast of what you said, whether that was going to happen or not. But you are here.
I'm here.
And now, as I'm just opening Twitter, we had, what was Alabama baseball under investigation, and now I read today earlier that Iowa has launched, there's been an investigation into Iowa baseball, and now Iowa State's football, wrestling, and track and field teams are under investigation into players gambling. What is happening?
Well, that's the box they open.
No kidding.
And this is not going to, this is going to keep happening. We've already seen it with guys in the NFL.
We have.
This is going to get worse a lot more before it gets better.
I mean, it's just the first story. I'm like, I'll just check Twitter right while the opening's gone. It's like, another one? Just line them up.
Yeah.
At this point.
Wow.
Back with another edition of the Intentional Foul. And don't have a rundown today, so we'll just kind of wing it. We'll get to the boxes.
We may do a little more winging it in the summertime.
That's fine.
I'm just too lazy to sit down and type up a couple pages of stuff. Plus, there's not as much going on.
No.
When we get into the NFL season, we got to have the rundown because there's all the games.
That's where it is. But
we're all right.
Went down to Michael's for the NFL draft. Stayed for about two and a half hours. We were pretty jazzed as we normally are for, you know, one decent first round pick, and then we were down at ABC Supply on Friday for the Milton Beloit Turner baseball game, and I had it on the iPad, and we were watching some picks, you know, saw Keanu Benton get taken and stuff like that. But we had Lauren on. We talked to him on the way to the Brewer game.
Yep, on Saturday.
Last Saturday, about both the Bears and Packers and who they had taken thus far, and he seemed pretty satisfied and pleased with the angles that Chicago had taken from Ryan Poles. And you, I mean, I know you're kind of always the draft. It's, you know, wait and see. You don't know whether these guys are good or not. You just kind of got to go on what the hope is by what you've read. But the hope by what you've read is it okay?
Well, yeah. It remains to be seen if these guys are any good in right. the NFL. But positionally, I like what they did. They addressed positions of need, which, you know, some people say, oh, God, you got so many holes, you got to just take best player available. In some instances, I do agree with that. But I think in the Bears' case, it was important for them to plug certain holes on both sides of the football, and I thought they did that. Started the night with the 9th pick, traded back with the Eagles to 10. Eagles take Jalen Carter. And the Bears end up taking Darnell Wright, a big offensive tackle, going to be the right tackle out of Tennessee. Pretty good pedigree, 5-star, top lineman coming out of high school, all SEC performer, you know, went up against the Georgia defense, went up against the Alabama defense and did very well. You know, the Jalen Carter pick is, it could be one that Bear fans lament for many years, but there's 8 other fan bases that are in the same boat with him because he dropped all the way to 9. So I liked him. The talent is there. It sounds like the motor, the character, the motivation may not be. So in that case, I'm okay. And, you know, the Bears addressed a huge need with that first pick. They, you know, the bread and butter of this team now, you know, for better or for worse going forward is Justin Fields. And the first thing you do is got to protect him. I didn't love their second pick. They took a D tackle out of Florida, Gervon Dexter, in the second round. four spots behind where the Pittsburgh Steelers took Keanu Benton. I think if Benton is available at 53, I think the Bears take him, which kind of stinks that he wasn't. Their other second-round pick, Tyreek Stevenson, corner out of Miami, sounds like he might be a steal, probably going to be the third corner to start. And in the NFL now, you got to have three or four guys back there that can cover, so that gives them some help. Took another D-tackle in the third round from South Carolina. Took the backup running back at Texas that played the last 3 years behind Bijan Robinson. Converted high school. He was a high school All-American quarterback, converted to running back in college. So I guess the good thing is he doesn't have a ton of mileage on him, which is always nice, but, you know, probably a special teams guy. Their other fourth-round pick, they take a Luke Fickell prodigy out of Cincinnati, Tyler Scott, a burner at wide receiver. I think my favorite pick, though, is their fifth-round pick. They got Noah Sewell, a linebacker out of Oregon. Brother Penny Sewell mm-hmm. was the seventh pick for the Lions last year. This dude has had a really nice career. I think he was a Pac-12 player of the year. I think he was a finalist for the Butkus. Five-star coming out of high school. Good pedigree, obviously, with his brother.
How do you fall?
Size concerns, and I think he had a little bit of an injury concern in the last year as well. But sounds like a guy they believe is going to come in and compete with Sanborn right away for that third linebacker spot. You know, we'll see. So that's nice. And then they got a couple of, you know, they had a compensatory pick late. They end up with 10 overall picks, but I like the tenor and the direction of where they were going with this. And, you know, the multiple trade backs, they still end up getting the position that they have the greatest need on the O-line, and you're able to recoup and take a couple more kicks at the can with some of these guys. I mean, you never know in football. You may get a fifth, sixth round corner, D-tackle, wide receiver, and they pop in the right situation. Could be as good as a first-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it's interesting to see now how the situations are similar about the Packers and the Bears now need to build around a new quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, before you wouldn't even picture them kind of walking the same line, but now they're in the same position. It's like you can't have the defense fail you because you're not sure what you have at quarterback and everybody that's going to be trying to help him. And the Packers kind of did that, except, man, they got... I had my head in my hands with Jackson Smith and Jigba, and instead it's Lucas Van Ness from Iowa, an edge rusher, and I was like, initially I was like disappointed, but I'm like, all right, fine. You know, the Packers continue to use their first-round picks on these defensive guys that are hopefully going to be there for a long time and be very productive. From what I've read, a lot has been made of the not being a starter. And it's like, they look at the tape, it's like, well, you just didn't start in that particular package they put on the field. If you're not in for that first play, you're not a starter.
Sure.
You come in for play two, what's the difference?
Right. Sure.
Who cares? You're still on the field 75, 80% of the defensive snaps or whatever, but you're not starting. So what?
It's a little weird.
It is.
It's a little weird that as a coach you would have a first-round talent player that you're not going to start the game with a package that includes him?
Have on the field for the very first snap.
I mean, I don't know that that means anything going forward. It's just kind of weird.
But, I mean, the way they explained it was like, okay, well, all right. Like you said when you were talking about some of the high-motor stuff with Jalen Carter, this dude's a high-motor guy. And to me, I've always looked at the past rundowns of who the Packers have taken, and it's like can take plays off or has sometimes can check out for a period of time or whatever. Those are the guys that usually flame out and flame out fast.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you can teach this guy some other stuff. If he's willing to go kill someone on the field, not literally, but it's like if he's willing to rip somebody's head off, you can teach him the other stuff. I want that ingrained in him first and foremost when he steps on the field. The other stuff, I'm relying on the coaching staff to actually mold him. You know, so if you've got that, fine. If he's going to do that, Preston Smith is probably not going to be on the team after this year or another year. Rashawn Gary's coming off at ACL. Who knows if he comes all the way back? You don't know. So this is this. I'm hoping is a good pick, but
Aaron Kampman 2.0.
You're right. Who was good until he hurt himself, and then they switched to a 3-4, and then he didn't. It was just not a fit anymore.
Yeah.
But Kampman was really good when they had him in the right position. I hope that's what this is. You talked about injury history. Luke Musgrave, the tight end from Oregon, played two games, or Oregon State, two games, and he hurt himself. He's done for the rest of the year. Came back for the combine, went to the Senior Bowl. They love him. Jalen Reed's a burner at wide receiver for Michigan State. They took another tight end, who I guess is a pretty big is a pretty good blocker. The one I was wondering, and we heard from Lauren in the car in the Brewery game, and I guess I hadn't thought about it because I hadn't researched it that deep, when they took the Penn State quarterback in the fifth round. And Lauren said he was going to be an undrafted free agent. There's no way that he should have been a fifth-round pick. So I'm wondering who saw what in him that said, we got to have this guy, he'd be a good backup. Or if Love flames out marvelously, maybe this dude will be serviceable. I don't know.
I heard a couple of different draft guys say they did not have him on the board at all.
At all. Yeah.
So that was, but, you know, I also think 18 quarterbacks, I think, were picked. If you're the Packers and you're sitting there, and I don't know how many had been picked up to that point, but if you knew coming out of the draft that you wanted one, you know, we talked about it the other day. Like, if you want them, go get them. You know.
That's all it is.
You may get crushed by it in a year or two, if the guy flames out, but fifth round, I don't think that's a huge gamble.
They got a D tackle. They got a corner. They got a running back. They got a safety. They got a couple of wideouts. One of them was a compensatory guy as well. And then a kicker in the sixth round, a kid who grew up in Colorado and kicked at Auburn and has missed over 50% of his kicks from 40-plus. I thought that was a little bit odd. Warm weather guy. Now you put him in to this environment.
Hey, kid, go out and kick a brick, because that's what it's like kicking a football in December in Lambeau.
And you can't even do it in 85, 90-degree weather down there, and now you want to do it. But apparently, I read something today that Bisaccia, the special teams guy, raved about this dude. He's the special teams guru. Fine, who am I to argue? If you think it's going to be good when he's not, then maybe you answer some questions.
It's a kicker. I think Packer fans should count their fucking blessings that they've had Mason Crosby for as long as they had, because
we've had a good run.
Totally. And the Bears had a great one with Robbie Gould until they screwed that up. He'd still be their kicker if they weren't so stupid. But a lot of you see a lot of turnover on kicker stuff. Dude. So, I mean, Packer fans, don't be so quick to shove Crosby out the door. You could go through like three kickers in a year very quickly. I trust me. I've seen it happen recently.
So, I guess overall, I'm fine. You know, whatever. I'd like to see some more receivers. A lot of these guys participated in the Senior Bowl. Five of them that they picked played at the Senior Bowl. And I guess if you're Goody, you look at those guys playing the best guys and how they match up and how they do. That's just as good as the rest of their college tape. And then that's what they like. So, I don't have any other thoughts to offer than, like you, I'm hopeful that all these dudes pan out and, you know, the holes are filled, especially a tight end and receiver to help Jordan Love.
So, as we sit today, like, how do you feel about the Packers in the first week of May as you look forward to, like, training camp and things like that? I mean, are you expecting this team to take significant steps back? Do you think they're going to play a lot of young guys and have youthful mistakes? Like, what do you think is going to happen here?
Michael sent me the home and away today, which I guess the schedule's coming out on Thursday.
Yeah.
But he sent me the home and the away opponents, and I said 8-9. You could probably flip that to 9-8, but I think they'd be right around, if we had an even number of games, they'd be right around the 500 level, I think. You know, I think they're going to win some games where people are going to be like, man, this team's not too bad. I think they're going to lose some games like, man, this team sucks. I just think it's one of those years because there's so much unknown stuff. Is the defense good? Is the defense not good? Is Joe Barry a good coordinator? Is he not? Seems like we've mentioned both of those things in the same seasons the last few years.
Right.
There's times where it's like, man, this guy's a genius. This guy's an idiot. You know, and Jordan Love, I don't know. They didn't pick up his option. They extended his contract, which apparently, according to the Packer media, this was a really big deal on not picking up his fifth-year option and instead extending his contract, basically giving him 2 years to basically tell you that whether he's worth a shit or not. And I don't really understand the nuances of the whole thing or why people were making a big deal, but not picking up his option and instead giving a one-year extension to his current contract, I didn't really get why that was such a big deal. I didn't follow it completely, but I guess that's where it is, and there wasn't much of a, from what I did glean from that, is that it wasn't showing much confidence in, you're our guy. It was a, we think you're our guy.
Kind of hedging your bets a little bit.
We're going to give you till this to figure it out, and then we better have a backup
plan. It's a prove-it deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
which I really don't think, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, and I don't even think Jordan Love should be offended by it. You haven't done anything yet. No, by no fault of your own, but you haven't done anything yet.
But like Wilde pointed out on his show the other day where he was like, you know, Gutekunst has been saying all this time, Jordan Love's ready. He's taken strides. He can lead this team. He can do this. We have confidence in him. And then this whole thing basically says, well, we'll see about all that.
Well, yeah, but if you had asked him that same question and he went, you know, is Jordan Love ready? And he goes, well, you don't think, like, it's the chicken or the egg right. thing. He's not, these guys aren't truth tellers.
No.
So.
No, that's one thing they are not.
It's half-truths and misdirections and, you know, I don't really want to answer this. So, you know, I don't think that's a big deal. I think this division is wide-ass open.
I agree.
I think that Detroit is going to be the sexy pick. Minnesota is probably going to be the smart pick. I think if the Packers were to go 10-7, I wouldn't be surprised at all. And I think the Bears are going to be in the mix. I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs or win the division, but they're going to be better, and they're going to be in the mix. And, you know, I think the Bears this year could be something like what the Lions were last year.
Lions are going to be down a few players.
They are. Early on, they are. But, you know, and they made some changes. They draft a running back at 12. They send DeAndre Swift out. You know, Jamal Williams is gone. He was a pretty big factor for them last year. So, you know, we'll see. That might have been a fluke last year. They may be the 4-win Lions that we all know and love.
Who did the Vikings take a quarterback for the potential future? I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember.
But it basically signaled to me, and I know Cousins said he came out late last week and he said, I want to be in Minnesota forever. Of course you do. Well, you want a job.
You want to keep getting $40 million a year.
You've just had
I want to sleep with Kate Upton. What, you know, I'll get what we want. I mean, just ask Mick Jagger, for Christ's sake. But I don't know, man. Like, you know, and speaking of, like, what you said about Gutekunst, today the Bears came out because Justin Fields graduated from college yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good for him. Ray Allen also graduated from UConn yesterday, 30 years.
I didn't see that.
You know, good
okay.
for him as well. So they had some press conference that, I don't know that they were correlated, but the Bears had a press conference talking about how Fields is, quote-unquote, light years ahead of where he was last year. Oh. And it's like, you know, I just always roll my eyes at that stuff because, like, what are you supposed to say? Like, nah, he's about the same. Actually, he's kind of gotten shittier. I know we just passed up drafting a quarterback, but he's actually worse. No, but I think for the Bears, Eberflus, second year, assume he learned a lot last year, first-time head coach. Getsy, second year, calling the plays. I would assume he learned a lot last year and learned who his quarterback. His quarterback's not Aaron Rodgers, and he's young, and he's got to work through some stuff. And then you improve some of the skill position stuff where, you know, I think Fields had one of the top completion percentages in football between 10 and 20 yards and down the field. Where he really struggles is the short passing game, was because nobody could get open. So you hope with like a guy like DJ Moore or maybe this kid out of Cincinnati that them windows get a little bit bigger and he's got a little bit more protection. And it just makes – it's not that like you figure it out. It's just the game's a little bit easier for you because you're not running for your life.
Right. Yeah, and I like on paper for Jordan Love, I mean, you got the guys back. Dobbs looks good. Watson looks awesome. You throw Reed in there, you get a couple of tight ends. And I'm really curious to see if there's any noticeable or significant differences in the way LaFleur's offense works.
Well, or, you got to figure that.
Or looks.
I mean, fantasy alert, I think A.J. Dillon is a worthwhile gamble this year because mm-hmm. I think the Packers are going to run the shit out of the football. And, look, all those guys you just rattled off, if the defense is any good at all, I don't know why this team's not right in that 8-10 game window
mm-hmm.
for wins because they do have a lot of talent on that roster. And, yeah, I mean, Rodgers typically won you, say he single-handedly won you 5 games a year just because he was awesome.
Right.
Well, last year, what, he maybe only won you 2?
Probably.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, I don't know that – I think if you think of the drop-off of, like, MVP going 14-3, Aaron Rodgers, Packers, to what this year is going to be, then, yeah, it's a huge drop. But from last year to this year, I don't think it's going to be that big of a difference.
I'm just wondering whether the offense is going to be more efficient because now you have Jordan Love maybe running it to the letter that LaFleur wants it to be run.
Probably. Be a lot less freelancing.
Right.
You know, a lot less audibling into shit at the line.
That's kind of what I'm wondering. Maybe we haven't seen the real true LaFleur offense because Rodgers and him spar about it. It's like it's been a compromise up until now. And now it's like, well, you got Jordan Love. You're our draft pick. You're going to do what I say you're going
to
do.
As Coach Suter used to say, when you have a cannon, you have to shoot it. And, like you know, that. You can't run the ball 40 times a game if you have Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback. Whether you want to or not, mm-hmm. it just ain't going to happen.
No.
So.
Oh, by the way, the Vikings drafted a quarterback in the 6th round out of BYU.
Okay.
That's not their future guy. No, but still, they're on... They're probably on
watch.
You
can't be drafting virgins and expect them to take you to the promised land in 2023. Steve Young and Jim McMahon ain't walking through that door, my friend.
Oh, my God.
Anything else from the draft surprise you or anything? I mean,
I really loved what the Steelers did, and I'm not a Steelers fan. I thought it was cool that they signed Joey Porter Jr., or they drafted him. Yep. I thought that was really cool. Then they took Benton. Then they took Herbig a couple of rounds later in the 4th, mm-hmm. I think, and it's like... That's awesome that those two guys get to keep playing together, and Porter being a long-time Steeler now has his kid playing for the team. So I thought that was really cool. But as far as the top and the quarterbacks and stuff, I mean, the Texans certainly did some stuff.
Yeah.
You know, having their quarterback, you know, traded with Watson and having some ammo in their pocket and stuff like that, I thought they were really good. You know, who else were movers in the 1st round. God, now it's
well, the,
2
I mean,
weeks ago, and I can't even remember.
The other side of that trade, the Cardinals
mm-hmm.
trading out of the 3 spot and getting the guy that they would have taken at 3 anyway in Paris Johnson and then getting all that extra capital, I thought that was a huge win for them.
Mm-hmm.
That Lion running back pick was a little strange in the moment, but then when you saw what they ended up doing with Swift with the trade, it made a little bit more sense. But they traded down, which was like, I don't know why you didn't just draft Bijan Robinson at 6. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what the players end up being. The Levis kid dropping out of the 1st round.
I thought it was interesting that there were still guys that had showed up for the 1st round in the back room that came out for the 2nd round. There were a handful of them. Levis went home. He was gone.
I just think that I'm not one of those people that likes to watch other people be uncomfortable. It's just not my thing. Like, that's why I'm not a reality TV guy. Who's that shit for when we're just sticking this thing in his face as he's watching his dream collapse? Like, who's enjoying that? What kind of a fucking sadist are you? You're sitting home laughing at this 22-year-old kid whose dream was to be a 1st-round pick, and it's going away, and like you're enjoying that.
It's dramatic television, and what have you said? These are TV shows.
I get it, but
you know, my whole problem with the draft, I've always hated.
Once you get to like 20, though, like you kind of know,
right? And you know who needs what.
Yeah, if somebody trades up,
that now you can.
Networks know what's going on,
right?
You know, Schefter could be like, hey, the Ravens aren't going to sign Lamar Jackson. They're trading up to 28. They're going to pick this guy. Get the camera on him. Like, it's not that hard.
My whole thing is we are at a TV show, but it's getting to the point where it's like the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
It's way too long. Like, there were points, and I had to point this out to Michael's wife, who was... I said, the other team's already got 6 minutes left on the clock, and the team before them, their pick hasn't even been announced yet.
Mm-hmm.
4 minutes has already run off the next team. They're so far behind because they got to interview these guys up there with Susie Culber, and it's like, no, once the pick's made, fucking announce it.
Well, and then they go to the dais, and all five fucking guys there, which is about four more than we need, they have to each give their opinion, and then they have to argue with each other about it.
And they got to roll tape on the guy for the special packages that they put together for all this. Meanwhile, the clock's ticking. This pick's in. That team's already got 6 minutes left out of their 10, and it's like, come on.
I miss the old days when we were kids when it was Boomer, TJ, and Kuiper.
Yep.
And Kuiper was the draft guy.
Yep.
And TJ was the football guy, and Berman was the broadcaster.
Yep.
And you just kept it moving. But now it's like Kuiper's there, and McShay's there, and Booger's there, and Riddick's there, and Greenberg's there.
And
it's like,
Greenberg.
Seriously, we don't need all these people.
Just keep it moving.
And then they go, and then they cut away, and they have Schefter and Mortensen. It's like,
how many guys do you need?
I get, like, it's competitive for these guys, but, like, remember the old days when, like, Edward would be in Dallas?
Yes.
Sal would be with the Eagles.
Yes.
You'd send, Mortensen to the San Francisco. Like, what happened to that?
That'd be great. Check in with Rob Domofsky, who's up out at the atrium at Lambeau Field. War Room's behind me. What are you hearing?
Get rid of these talking heads that love to hear the sound of their own voice.
It's just way too long. I just wish it would go, that the broadcast would move as the speed that the actual draft moves.
Yeah.
But it doesn't because it's a TV show. They need sponsors. They need commercials. And it's just achingly long. But nevertheless, I will watch it and love it every single year. Anything else?
No. Okay. I think that pretty much covers the draft.
All right. So the Bucks lost.
Yep.
Budenholzer, how long did it take?
Like 5 days, I think. Okay. Yeah, something like that.
And I know what you had said. You said you don't think he survives the loss, and you were right. So kudos to you. A lot of people also said, well, this, you know, maybe now he's on thin ice. Well, he must have clearly been on thin ice going into the playoffs. I mean, it's, and like, I still go back to what you said about the regular season. And maybe I'll have to remind you of that if we're in the throes of it next year, depending on what this team looks like and who's the coach. Don't get excited about the regular season because playoffs come and it's a different animal.
Well, yeah, I mean,
it's cool.
It's cool, and it matters in to a point, but you can't take regular season success really and protract it out into the playoffs. I've had a lot of thoughts over the last week or so since the Bucks season ended. Let's just talk about those last two games first, games 4 and 5. Game 4, in control the whole game, up late, and completely meltdown. Jimmy Butler goes bananas in the fourth quarter. I think he had 22 points in the fourth quarter. No adjustments made. And you should be leaving South Beach tied 2-2, get with Giannis back and feeling good about yourself going, okay, we got a 3-game series and 2 of them are at home and we're the 1 seed. Instead, you blow that game. You go back to Milwaukee with your tail between your legs in a desperate situation. And then it came out, apparently Giannis was in rough shape after game 4 in the locker room. by all accounts. And one of the things that people didn't talk about much with him, and, you know, obviously his back was bothering him, and you could tell in certain points of that game that he was a little ginger on it. He had only played a quarter and a half in 3 weeks going into game four. I think that's really difficult. You know, any athlete at any level knows if you take 3 weeks off from competition, it's tough to just ramp it right back up. Now imagine getting thrown into a must-win playoff situation in the NBA. Oh, and you're the best guy on the team, so you got to do everything. I thought he was exhausted. It sounded like he was getting IVs and he was kind of sick and hurting after game four. So that happens. Then you go to game five. Again, pretty much in control the whole night. Get to the fourth quarter, and you blow the game in ridiculous fashion. And it's almost hard to even list everything that happened. Zero defensive adjustments in that game and really the whole series. And one of the things that a lot of people were screaming about was you got to double Jimmy Butler. That's not as simple as it sounds, because Jimmy Butler isn't an offensive initiator. He's an offensive finisher. And what I mean by that is he's not like Giannis. A lot of times will get the rebound and bring the ball down, or they will just throw it into him and he will bring the ball down and start the offense. Jimmy Butler doesn't do that. That's what their point guards for Miami do. Jimmy Butler's on the wing. He's on the baseline. He's getting screens and he's cutting. So you can't just say we're going to double team him, because a lot of times when he's getting the ball, he's already in scoring motion, so it's too late. So that's one thing. My biggest problem with them defensively at the end of the day was two things. I was not a proponent of them putting Giannis on Jimmy Butler in game four because of the fact that Giannis hadn't played for 3 weeks. I figured he would be rusty. Miami is a team that has notoriously done a good job of taking charges on him, and I just thought that guarding Jimmy Butler would have put him in too great of a precarious situation of fouling out, and they needed him on the floor. In game five, that's a different situation. I thought down the stretch, Giannis should have been switched over to him. John Barry sent me a text yesterday. 2 years ago in the bubble, Giannis only guarded Butler like 20 possessions, and he said afterward that he wishes he'd have got to guard him more. The year they won the title, Bucks swept Miami, and he guarded Butler like 125 possessions. And then this season in the playoffs, he only guarded him like 20 possessions. And again, it came out that he wanted to guard him more. So the question is, why didn't Budenholzer do that? Don't know. Only he knows. I think part of it is he has a lot of faith in Holiday, but the problem was,
how long do you give that though?
Well, but the problem was it's not just the guy. It's not just like, well, Drew was guarding Jimmy. Jimmy had 50. He got 50 on Drew. That's not how it works, especially in the NBA. Like, the biggest problem I had was Brook Lopez guarding Bam Adebayo. Lopez is playing 10 feet off of him. And Reggie Miller talked about it during the game. He's like, Bam Adebayo is just playing quarterback. He's just standing at the free throw line where he's an 80% free throw shooter. Okay? So you're basically giving an 80% free throw shooter a wide open 15-footer, which he made a lot of, or he just gets to sit there with no ball pressure on him and pick the defense apart, and that's where you were seeing guys like Butler and Kyle Lowry get these easy, cheap backdoor baskets because there was no ball pressure. And again, no adjustment from Bud. Couple that with Giannis played his worst 17 minutes of basketball that he's probably played in 5 years. He was horrific in the fourth quarter. He was equally bad in overtime. I thought he was completely gassed. He had nothing in the tank. And I think that goes back to conditioning and him missing all that time. He couldn't make a free throw. And there's this the famous clip at the end where there's the jump ball and Lopez tips it to him and he don't even want it. And he just hot potatoed it to Middleton and almost threw it out of bounds. And he's taken a lot of shit for that, for not, quote-unquote, wanting it. Well, he couldn't make a free throw. I'm not going to get mad at what would have been better if he had caught it, covered up, like, hey, I want to get fouled, and then went up and missed two? Like, is that better?
Give it to somebody else who has a better chance to make a bucket.
I don't criticize him in that situation. Okay. He didn't have it that night.
That's self-awareness to me.
For sure. But he was just bad. Bad decision-making down the stretch, taking jump shots, going soft to the rim, turning the ball over. It was just the whole thing was bad. But you're still up two with 2 seconds left in the game. Side out of bounds in front of your bench. Miami has the ball. And you take Brook Lopez out of the game. The guy who was one of the three finalists for Defensive Player of the Year, who's going to make an all-defensive team, who led the NBA by a mile in contested shots and is 7 feet two. You're taking him off the floor to go small to match up with Miami. And what does Miami do? They run a backdoor lob to the rim because Giannis is the biggest guy on the floor and he's guarding the ball. There's nobody under the basket. And Butler makes a tough shot to send you into overtime. But, there's still 5/10 of a second left on the clock. Bud doesn't call timeout. They inbound the ball, go to overtime. Again, Bucks down, I think it was 2 or whatever at the end of the game. They get a stop. They get the rebound with like 12 seconds left. 2 timeouts in the pocket. Don't call one, which I can forgive because Boston did the same thing last night in the Philly game. And as a player, I get it. Like, sometimes you don't want a timeout if you're in a good rhythm and you're feeling good. They weren't in a good rhythm. They hadn't been able to score. They go down. Nobody wants it. It ends up in Grayson Allen's hands, of all people, who doesn't even get a shot off. And that's how the season ends. At the 4-second mark, maybe even the 3-second mark, Bud should have been running down the sideline. Tackle the referee if you have to, calling a timeout. Because at that point, it's a mess. Like, your only way, you need a miracle here. And that shouldn't have been the case. You had 2 timeouts in your pocket. That's why he got fired. The down the stretch stuff with the Bucks offense in his entire regime there has been bad in the playoffs. It's what got him beat by Toronto his first year, got him beat in the bubble when the teams just built a wall for Giannis and nobody knew he didn't know what to do. They got away with it the year they won the title because of some of those injuries to Brooklyn, and they got burned by it again last year. People forget last year, yeah, they didn't have Middleton. They were up 3-2 in that series. Giannis had 40-20 in Game 6 at home, and they lost. And then they go on the road in Game 7 and get demolished. So, Bud lost 6 of his last 7 playoff games with this group. And I think it was a tough decision for the Bucks to do this. It's not without precedent, though. Nick Nurse just got fired. He won a title 4 years ago. Frank Vogel got fired last year. He had won a title 2 years prior.
3 out of the last 4 coaches that have won NBA titles are no longer coaching.
Well, and Ty Lue won one in Cleveland, and then when LeBron left, he got fired. Now he's in L.A., but, you know, I mean, Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl and got fired 2 years after winning a Super Bowl in Philadelphia where they had been screaming for one forever. So this isn't without precedent, but I don't know, man. Like, there's, like I said, we could talk about this for hours, but it just comes down to me the mistakes and the weaknesses this year were the same ones they had 5 years ago. And Bud did, you know, if you're going to give a guy shit, you got to give him credit when they deserve it. Bud deserves a ton of credit for the system they put in, for the culture that they put in. Most wins in the NBA the last 5 years. Most playoff wins in the NBA the last 5 years. Giannis won 2 MVPs. They won a title. Brooke Lopez, Pat Connaughton, Bobby Portis, Westman. These guys all played, well, maybe not West, but those other guys. These guys all played their best basketball of their career when they got to Milwaukee and got into this system. You got to give them credit for that. But you don't even play Crowder in the last two games. I think he played like 18 seconds.
Why'd you get him?
Where the fuck was Javon Carter? Like, those are the kind of decisions. And, you know, a lot of people talked about in game one when Giannis got hurt, Brooke Lopez ended the game like 4 for 7 from the field. And then in game two and game three, he was really good because they put him in the post. Well, why did you have to wait the entirety of game one to figure that out? You have to figure that out in real time. Okay, Giannis is gone. We have to now take our other big guy, and we have to now put him in the big guy spot.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going to take Portis, and we're going to put him where Brooke was. But it's like it always takes another game for those things to be figured out. And when you're going against a better coach, it's just going to burn you. And it, you know, it's unfortunate that Bud's got to be the fall guy. I mean, the Bucks had the third highest payroll in the NBA. They had $181 million payroll. And they got knocked out in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And I like John Horst. I think John Horst has done a pretty solid job. But John Horst is not without blame here. I mean, you trade George Hill and Jordan Wara and a million second-round picks for Jay Crowder, and in the biggest game of your season, you don't play him. Last year, you trade Dante DiVincenzo for Serge Ibaka, who can't play anymore. You know, a couple of years ago, they made the trade, and they traded a bunch of picks, second-round picks, for Nico Mirotic. He hasn't been seen in the NBA since. You know, you have a guy in Jordan Wara who was in your program for 2.5 years, and you got to the trade deadline, and you said to yourself, this guy can't play in the playoffs. So that's either on Bud, because he couldn't get him there, or it's on Horst for making a bad pick. Now, it's not like he was a lottery pick. He was a second rounder. But still, you had 2.5 years in the program. Beauchamp this year, he couldn't play in the playoffs. Well, he has to be able to play next year. He has to, because that is the spot that they're at the biggest dearth of talent. I mean, we can get into the roster. This is ugly, and this is the tax that you pay for winning the title. It's the title tax. You gave up all your shit to get Holiday. You paid everybody. You won a title. Now you got to pay the piper. And I told somebody, you know, Giannis's bad free throw game the other night against Miami, I go, that's the evening out from game 6 of the finals when he went 17 for 19. If you're going to have that game, you're going to have this game. That shit, that's why it's an average. It evens itself out, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you look at the roster. Here's who's under contract for next year. Giannis at $45.6 million. Holiday at $36.1 million. Portis at $11.7 million. Grayson at 8.5, Connaughton 9.4, Beauchamp 2.6. That's it. That's who's under contract. So Lopez, Crowder, Ingles are all free agents. Wes Matthews, I'm sure he will retire. Myers Leonard, Goran Dragic, they will not be back. And then you've got a $40 million player option for Chris Middleton hanging over your head. The Bucks are going to have to make some really difficult decisions, and they have to do better. They have to look at Miami and go, Caleb Martin, Gabe Vincent, Max Strus, these guys weren't drafted. They came up through your system and you guys developed them, and you guys are probably going to end up for the second year in a row with this group in the Eastern Conference Finals. What are we doing wrong? You know, the Bucks got some big award, the Wisconsin Herd did, for like the best franchise in the G League. Well, where are all the players? Well, I don't understand that. I think it's going to be interesting what happens with Crowder. I don't think Ingles will be back. I don't think Wes will be back. I don't think Javon Carter will be back. But they're in a tough spot, man. Like, you either run it back or you tear it down. If you run it back in the short term, I could see a 2-year, $25 million for Brook, maybe a third-year team option. You know, I don't know about Middleton. Middleton was so bad, and he looked so bad and so slow coming back from these injuries. I don't know who's paying him $40 million a year, unless he just wants long-term security from somebody. But I could see him picking up his option for one more year. Maybe there's a sign and trade possibility the Bucks can do with him, but and it's also going to depend on who they hire.
I was just going to ask who's coaching the team.
Well, Woj said the other day on ESPN when he gave his report about the firing, and this was interesting, and I heard Simmons talk about this on his podcast. Woj made the point, and he said it twice. The Bucks are going to take their time, and there may be a coach who is not currently available who they may want to talk to. Well, there's 8 teams left.
Mm-hmm.
You ain't getting Spoelstra. You ain't getting Kerr, for sure. I don't think there's a way you can pry Darvin Ham from the Lakers. He's only been there 1 year, and they may win the whole thing. It ain't Thibodeau for the Knicks. It ain't Joe Mazzulla, 34-year-old Boston head coach. Doc? If Philly flames out, loses this series, they could fire Doc. He could be a possibility. The other head coach, if Phoenix gets beat, they fire Monty Williams. They just got a new owner. That could be a possibility, and the Bucks did interview Monty Williams a couple years ago before they hired Bud, so there is a relationship there. The guy that I think I would love, love, love to see considered for the job is currently on Doc Rivers' staff with the Sixers. His name is the alien, Sam Cassell. I would be ecstatic to see him get an opportunity to be a head coach. I think the Bucks should take a very, very long, hard look at Frank Vogel. He just won a title 3 years ago with the Lakers, and people that follow the NBA will remember he coached those Indiana teams back in the early 2010s that were going up against the Heat and giving them all they wanted. And he's a big reason why Paul George became a superstar, and he turned Roy Hibbert and David West and George Hill and these guys, they're taking Miami and giving them all they wanted in the Eastern Conference for a couple of years. So, guy's a good coach with a pedigree. You know, Nick Nurse is the sexy name. I don't know if that fits with what the Bucks need. I think the Bucks need somebody that can develop some younger talent. And one of the biggest criticisms with Nurse was his inability to do that in Toronto and his unwillingness to play young guys. I think the Bucks, and going back to the regular season thing, the worst year of the 5 that Bud had, they were the 3 seed, they won the title. So I think they need to look at the regular season now, regardless of who they bring back and whatnot. Like, we need to develop some other guys. Like, if we get the 4 seed, I guess we just can't worry about that, because we need to make sure that Marjon Beauchamp and whoever we get in the second round this year, and maybe we take a flyer on a young guy who hasn't quite popped yet and somebody else gave up on him. We need to make sure that those guys can play in the playoffs. Because you look around at all these teams, they're young and they're athletic. And the Bucks are slow and they're plodding. And I'm just not sure going forward that style is going to work. And look, Giannis can't shoot, man. He can't. And he's 28 years old. And he's been in the league for 10 years. He's now going to be hitting the back nine starting next year. He's still in his prime, but he's going to be on the back nine because he's not going to play till he's 45 years old. You got to figure out kind of what kind of player is he going to be going forward, and what are the kind of people we got to surround him with. And as much as I love Middleton and Holiday, the Bucks need to get more athletic on the perimeter. And I went back the other night and watched some highlights from the 2021 playoff run. And if you watch Chris Middleton, it's like a different guy. It was a different guy. And they ran the Giannis Middleton pick and roll constantly in the playoffs that year. And they never ran it this year. And
because they couldn't?
No, they just didn't run it. Maybe Middleton physically couldn't do it. I don't know. But they didn't try it. And, again, it goes back to Bud and the inability to adjust on the fly and make the right decision. And, you know, people have brought up his brother getting in a car accident and dying, you know, the day before game four. And, look, it's very sad. And I can remember being at a tournament in Iowa at Wartburg College, and I played a game, and after the game, my parents told me that my grandma died, and we had to play a game the next day. And the only time you're not thinking about that is during the game. Mm-hmm. So to say that some of these mistakes were because he didn't have his head in the game, I don't really buy that. And if he didn't, him and the people around him should have known well enough that he should have stepped aside. So, you know, is it unfortunate that he gets fired the same week that happens? Yeah, life sucks, man. Life is not fair that way. It's unfortunate. But I think the Bucks had to do this because I think roster-wise, the options are so limited. Unless you're willing to trade Portis, I would seriously look at trading Grayson Allen. He's in an expiring contract. I think you need to upgrade there, but the Giannis clock is ticking again, and the media is pushing it hard already.
Of course.
And Giannis unfollowed ESPN the other day on Twitter after they had a report that he was going to be looking at the Knicks as a place, you know, and it's just like, come on, man. Come on. I mean, I know you people want to shove him out of there, but if he leaves, I think he would go to Chicago. I don't think he'd go to the Knicks or the Lakers or any of those kind of teams. But I don't think he's leaving because I think his brothers and his mother and his girlfriend and his children who are going to be in school by the time his contract is up, they've got roots here. He can't get more money. He's not a money guy anyway.
He's got enough. And I think he probably knows that.
Dude, and after that thing that came out a couple weeks ago, I'm not sure Giannis plays much more than one more contract. I don't think he's a LeBron. I don't think he's a guy that wants to play at least 40. I think he's going to look around when he's probably 35 and his kids are 10, 12 years old, and he's going to be like, I have $500 million. Like, what am I doing? I've got a title. I've won MVPs. I've won finals MVPs. They're going to build a statue in front of the Pfizer for me. I will never have to pay for anything ever. Like, why am I killing myself? Wouldn't shock me.
Interesting. That was a good, solid about 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, sorry I didn't let you get in there much.
No, it was good.
I had to rant. There's more stuff to talk about, but now we don't have to get into it.
Now that they're done, are you watching any of the playoffs, or are you now just passively?
Sporadically.
Yeah.
You know, I watched the fourth quarter last night of Boston-Philly. Harden was awesome.
Seemed like a good game.
Embiid was like Giannis. He was terrible. And then it got to the end of the game, and he didn't want the ball because Horford was locking him down. And you know, Jokic last night has 50. And they lose, and I'm sitting there watching these games, and I'm like, Embiid, Jokic, Giannis, kind of universally the three best players in the league right now. What do they all got in common? They're big guys. It's really fucking hard at the end of these games to throw the ball to a big guy anymore, like back in the day, and tell him to go get a bucket. It's really hard. It's way easier to do with a perimeter guy. It just is. It's harder to double-team him. You've always got the three-point shot in play. You can't touch anybody away from the basket. Underneath the basket, it's hand-to-hand combat. It's just really hard, man. And the reason Jokic was so good last night is because he was able to hit some shots away from the basket. But that's what I'm saying with the Bucks, man. Like, I love Drew and Middleton, and they'll always be favorites of mine, and I hope their jerseys are hanging in the rafters someday, but I think the window's closed. I think you could justify running it back next year with some tweaks and obviously with a new coach, but that's it. I just don't see it farther than that. Oh, and one more thing. Giannis has a player option for this summer. He can extend out 3 extra years, which would be he would be locked up for the next 5 years. I don't think he'll do it. If he did, it would be wonderful. He did cut all of his hair off, so maybe he's in a
what?
Yeah, he shaved it rookie style. He's not bald, but he's shaved his head. So he looks like he's about 14 again. So I think, you know, I think he's got to do a lot of soul searching, man. He really does, because when he looks bad, he looks really bad. When he looks great, like in 2021, when he puts it all together, it's all-time shit. But when he looks bad at the end of these games, it's ugly. And the Bucks look ugly at the end of these games because they're slow and they're plodding and they're big and they're not athletic. And, you know, you throw the ball to Giannis on the wing and you say, hey, man, drive on these four dudes and make something happen. That's tough. It's really tough. And he's got to figure out what he's going to do in the second half of his career with this jumper. Got to do something.
All right. That's some good NBA stuff from our NBA guy. We'll not much else in the water except for the Brewers, which we don't, I mean, they just came back from a horrific road trip playing the Dodgers tonight to start a series.
Well, we had fun at the game Saturday.
Oh, God, that was a blast.
Got nice and liquored up. sat right behind our boy Joel.
Yep. That was fun. That was a nice surprise.
That was fun. Yep. Got to see Trout hit two homers. Brewers still won.
You got a long sleeve hoodie out of it that you're wearing right now.
I did. Nice.
Barrel man thing.
Nice.
No, that was cool. That was fun. It was cool to see some of those guys that you don't, and I said this on the air as part of my commentary. It's, you know, we don't hear different league, different two time zones away. We don't see these teams.
Not much.
And it's cool when you have one of the top three players, top five, whatever you want to call Trout, come here and to see him hit two home runs and see that the rest of the team is not good.
Well, Otani. But,
or, no, sorry.
Yeah.
Other than him and Shohei. But it's like, and then the rest, it's like those guys did everything they could. You couldn't ask for much more, and they still got doubled up.
It's Hunter Renfro. It's washed up Rendon.
Serious, who but booted a couple.
I'll tell
there.
You what, man. I told my dad the next day, it just sounds different coming off of Trout and Otani's bat. I mean, there's just a pureness when they hit the baseball that. And you can really hear it when you're down close like we were. That was really cool. So,
well, good. I'm glad we haven't been to a game in a while. So
it's been a while.
That was good. We had a good crew with Coach O and Lauren, and it was a good time. We both had people there in different sections that we went off to go see. So a lot of people came to that. Weather wasn't the greatest, but whatever. We had some.
We weren't there to tailgate anyway.
No, we weren't. No, that was fine. Even though we did do a little bit of that. Post game.
Yeah.
That's fine. Let the parking lots clear out.
Yeah.
We've got a cooler. You and I were talking about the broadcast teams, which over the last few years have become a real big question mark about who's doing the game, where and when and why. And I guess we've never really got explanations on it. As far as the radio side, Uecker just doesn't do road games anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He just doesn't. That's fine. He's at the end of his career. He can do what he wants.
He can do whatever he wants.
I mean, honestly. But you have a real good setup in a longtime radio guy in Levering, but now that's being affected by the television side. I don't even remember back when I was first board hopping Brewer games when I was 18. So we're talking 25 years ago. It was Bob Uecker and Jim Powell. That was it. You don't have anybody else.
Nope.
You've got four radio guys now in the rotation. So Uecker doesn't go on a road game. That puts Levering and Grindle as the co-pilots.
Mm-hmm.
Levering's the guy, Rindle's the sidekick. Well, now you've got Brian Anderson, who, very good, and I'm talking the TV guy, not the actual Brewer player. On the TV side, Anderson has all kinds of other commitments to do everything. He does basketball for the NBA. He's done the NCAA tournament. He's done all this stuff. He constantly gets pulled away. And instead of going in a different direction, like having Kashan, who's done games,
brutal.
Well, and you've also had LePay come do games, which not normal, but known guy for the fan base. I thought he made a smooth transition to TV. They're not going with either of those routes. They're taking Levering away from radio. That puts your number three guy in your radio rotation as the main dude in Lane Grindle, who's not terrible, but he's not either of those two guys. And then you've got Josh, I don't know whatever his name is, who I cannot fucking stand. I don't think he's very good. And I don't know how they got who, I don't know how much money he could be making being the number four dude.
Sure.
But now he's in charge when Grindle takes off a couple innings, he's your guy. So basically you go from number one to number four on road games in some innings. I don't know how you can think that that's successful. So now you've got Levering doing TV. Schroeder doesn't do some road games. And so they've got a rotation of Dillard and Rutino. And I don't know. I don't understand. People tune in, and you had said this, and I 100% agree. People tune in because they want to hear the voices. And as soon as they turn it on, I know I'm going to hear this person.
It's a level of comfort.
You don't know now, TV or radio, who's doing what. Why are they gone? Oh, I guess they're over there. Oh, they're getting pulled over there. Why isn't this person going? I guess he's not coming. So it's one of these two guys that's filling in. There's way too much going on. There just is. And I don't blame Anderson for having the outside interests, but I just wish there was just a little bit better formula to pull this off. And you, I know, just want some better guys.
Yeah, it's kind of rough over there right now at Bally's and TMJ. Some of those guys are not very good. Some of them aren't what they used to be. And like you said about Uecker, Uecker can do what he wants. Brian Anderson can do what he wants if you want to keep him. Brian Anderson's doing right now kind of what Uecker did in the 80s when Uecker was he's on the Tonight Show and he's got Mr. Belvedere and he's doing the game of the week on NBC with Costas. And so he was doing other shit too. He wasn't, I don't know how many games he was missing. We were little kids back then, but if he was doing other shit.
And if you say to him, we don't want you to do that anymore, he's going to be like, then I'll find my own way.
And he could have. I mean, he's doing WrestleMania. He was a celebrity. He was a big-time broadcaster in the 80s.
But like I mean, Anderson can do that now.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Brian Anderson.
Because if they say, we need you on TV solely for us, he'd be like.
He'd be like, that's fine. I can work full-time for Turner. We got golf. We got baseball. We got basketball.
Exactly.
I'm good.
Right. So the Brewers kind of in a or Bally's or whatever.
And I think they're okay with that for the time being, and there will probably be a time in Brian Anderson's life in 8 or 10 years when he wants to slow down and he goes back to doing more Brewer games. The Schroeder thing I get, he had that heart issue a couple of years ago, and I think that he's in his 60s and he's got grandkids and his wife probably wants him to slow down. And, if I was 62-year-old Bill Schroeder, I'm not sure I want to go out to California for 2 weeks either.
I was just going to say, you want to do a three-city West Coast road trip?
Not really. Not really. You know, when you're 45 and you're working with Vaskersian, maybe.
Right.
You know, you're going to go out and have some beers, but, like, he's just going to go to the game, go for a walk, order some room service, and go to bed. Like, you know what I mean?
That was good.
These other guys, though, is this where I have the bone to pick. Levering on the radio is fine. I know he wants to be a TV guy. There's probably more money in it for him than on the radio side, but he's very dry. I just find him to be very blah. He doesn't really have any good stories. He doesn't really have, I don't know, his call is like his home run call. I'm just not feeling it with him. Tim Diller is just a tool. whether he's on the pre-post game show with Kashan or whether he's doing a game, he just annoys me. He annoyed me when he was a player with all the goofy shit that he was doing, and they were, and the Brewers put it on social media, and I get it, and it's ha-ha and all that, but it's just like, yeah, that's just not for me. I just don't care for that. Vinny Rotino, he's got the Jerry Augustine pass for me, where it's like, you're not very good at your job, but I know you love the Brewers, and you're a homegrown Major League Baseball player, so fine, but just let's not have you on a lot of game calls. Let's keep you at the desk. Craig Kashan, brutal play-by-play guy. Whitewater alum, worked in the state forever, seems like a nice guy. He's lost his fastball. I will never say a bad word about Sophia, so don't tempt me. And who am I missing?
I think that's it.
Is that it?
I think you're good.
It's just not great. And yeah, the rotating cast of characters. I mean, thank God they finally got rid of that idiot Dario, because that guy was atrocious. Whatever the hell, whatever Bill Cosby thing he put in Jen Latta's drink, how they ended up together, wow. But anyway, I miss the consistency. And I told you, we were talking about it before. When the Bucks were on in the playoffs, they're on ESPN, for the first round, I'm watching the Bally's feed. I want to listen to Lisa and Marcus.
Yep.
Those are my people. Those are my announcers. I've heard them all year. I know they know the ins and outs of my team. I don't give a shit about some of these other teams.
You know, John Linder told me about this way back when, because he worked for the Badger, the Daily Cardinal, when he was at Wisconsin. And everybody was all pumped when game day came in. And you got these national people who are descending on Madison. He's like, this is the worst thing that could happen for Badger fans, because these guys are going to say a bunch of stuff that they don't know what they're talking about because they're never here.
Yeah.
It's like, you want to know what's going on with the team, follow guys that are there every day.
Yeah.
You know, and that's basically where we're at now, because these guys that are just watching and don't have any connections to the cities and these franchises, they just pop around and, oh, this is what I've heard, or this is who I've talked to. And it's like, they don't actually know what's happening.
No, and my criticism with a lot of these guys, it's not personal. Like, I've met Levering, nice guy. We saw him speak a couple years ago at a seminar over at Miller, at the time Miller Park, and, you know, he talked about his struggle coming up through the minors, and I appreciate how hard he works, but he's just not my cup of tea. And some of these guys, and maybe it's partly the people that are working with him too. You know, I think when you're trying to be the straight man to Tim Dillard, it's a tough job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and with Schroeder, there's a pretty big age gap there. You know, Levering's early 40s, late 30s, Schroeder's mid 60s. You know, at least with BA, BA's around 50, right. And they've worked together for 10 plus years, so they've got that rapport. So I don't know. I mean, just put Sophia on my screen. I mean, it's better than watching Yelich watch a third strike go by without swinging at it. Just put her on the screen. I'm good.
Well, we don't have
We had a lot of griping in this one.
I know. We don't have to talk anymore about the actual
Brewers
team.
Brewers cut their fucking beer sales back now from the 8th to the 7th inning.
Well, That's true.
Glad I went to the two April games.
No kidding. We were able to take advantage of that pretty late. That was good.
I just wonder what the reasoning behind that is, but
I'll have to read the article and see about some more stuff when the morning comes. But I think that's probably a good place to a lot of unpacking. And
I guess it could be. I guess it could be worse. We could be A's fans and have to listen to their announcer. Just Google Oakland A's announcer, folks, if you haven't seen that clip by now.
Seriously.
Yikes.
And you won't, if you want to tune into the A's broadcast in the very near future.
Be a different guy calling the games.
Correct.
Yeah.
For a while. Yeah. Maybe forever.
Maybe forever. Probably forever in 2023.
All right, that is a good hour plus for the intentional foul, non-scripted for today. So thank you for listening in and downloading. And please subscribe. And, of course, please tell your friends. Maybe we'll be back next week. Maybe we'll be back in 2 weeks. Who knows? But we appreciate you being here. And until next time, I'm Josh.
I'm Dan.
We will talk to you down the road.
Let's go, Brewers. Get hot.